M17, number 2B.
Into the language of spirit. That's our purpose of reading the Bible. Therefore, when you study or read John Dory's Bible verbatim reports, you know he has gone through the whole Old Testament and then through the four Gospels. What he has done is that he has taken the text of the Bible, then translated it back into the synonymous terms. Therefore, you will always see that if he takes a book of the Bible, that he uses a method that is quite unique and that is only now being discovered in the science of language, Literatur, wie heißt Literatur eigentlich auf Englisch?
Literature.
The science of literature.
Science of language.
Yeah, linguistics. Now we got it. Yeah. But what is found, namely the method of epitomizing. This is a terrific method, a very scientific method, and a method that we as students of Christian Science should really be aware of and should be a master in it. What does it mean to use the method of epitomizing? It means that you can take a whole text that may run over pages and pages in the Bible and hear the tone, the spiritual tone, you see, and translate it into that symbol of the tone. If it's the tone of mind, you translate it in a symbol called mind. And therefore, you can take a whole book of the Bible and just lay it out in a few epitomes. You know what epitomes are? Summary text. A short summary text is an epitome. Eine Kurzfassung. Can you, in German, eine Kurzfassung or eine Zusammenfassung? Besser ist eine Kurzfassung. That's an epitome. You take a whole elaborated thing and you distill out of it the salient point, the main point. And that's the epitome. Now that epitome can always be epitomized by a synonymous term, because that's the nature of God. We always have to go back right to the nature of God. The nature of God is mind, spirit, soul, or life, truth, and love, operating either as Christ or Christianity or as science or so. So you can bring it right back to the synonymous term and epitomize it. So that finally you have perhaps the whole big book of Samuel, first book and second book of Samuel, I don't know how many, many dozens of pages, and you can just reduce it and say, well, what he is telling us is the story of how a little idea from its inception can grow to its complete fulfillment. How? Through mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. That's it. So you can forget the whole thing about the symbol he uses in the Bible. You can forget all about Hannah and about Eli, or what's his name?
Eli.
And all those things that happened there. You can forget it. And just have the tonality, oh, he knew something about mind, mind as mind, mind as spirit, mind as soul, mind as spirit. So, for instance, so you just see that in the whole tonality of the seven synonymous terms. Now, the very same thing you can do with the textbook. The textbook, as Mrs. Eddy has written it, is also like the Bible, a very voluminous book, 600 pages and a lot of sentences and sentences and sentences. But like with the Bible, you can say, but what is really the tonality of it? What is really the true story of it? And now, when we read a chapter of the textbook, say like prayer, you are no more reading in the first place or as a main object each sentence and what each sentence means. That's secondary. Primary is what is the tonality of it? What are what I call what are the subjects that Mrs. Eddy is bringing up in that chapter? Those subjects are not each sentence a subject. Each sentence makes a statement, but many, many sentences together bring up a subject, a tone. And therefore, today when we read a chapter in the textbook, we read, oh, here is the prayer of mind. And we read it, the prayer, oh, this is the prayer of mind. Oh yes, this is still the prayer of mind. Oh, now here she changes. And you get, oh, here it's the prayer of spirit. The form of the prayer that is formed by the tone of spirit. And you go on for a page, two pages, and suddenly you feel, oh, now she's showing us the nature of prayer as formed by soul. What is the prayer of soul? And you go on and you read and read and read, and suddenly you feel, here she makes a break. And what she's showing is, what is the nature of prayer from the point of view of principle? That has the tone of principle. So, and so on, right through. And again you can see this marvel of marvel, that Mrs. Eddy did not write a textbook by giving a lot of statements, but that she had an ordered subject which was ordered according to the seven synonymous terms, and that she translated those tones, like in the Bible, translated it into terms and words in order to approximate again the tone of the seven synonymous terms. So naturally, instead of having 17 pages on prayer and thinking, now what is in it? What did she say? I don't know anymore. I just remember one or two sentences. Instead of that, see, you know it. You know, oh, she can't tell anything else, but prayer is praying prayer to God. It has to do with God. And God is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Therefore, what is the nature, the character, the attitude of prayer when it is an attitude of mind? And you know at once, well, it's desire, it's seeking. Well, what is the prayer when it has the attitude of spirit? Well, if you know spirit, you know at once, well, it's an attitude of reflection, of gratitude, of worshipping, that's what is there. Prayer. Well, what is the prayer of soul? You know what it is, without knowing, without remembering or memorizing. The prayer of soul must be an attitude of soul. An attitude of soul is to be willing to reform, or else there is no prayer. So therefore you can more or less reconstruct the whole textbook yourself once you know the underlying structure of it. And the underlying structure of it is very easy, because it is the 4x4, the four sides of the Holy City reflected 4x4, 16 chapters, and each chapter is built up usually the word order until you have it. Everybody can remember that. What is 4x4 and what is 7? And if he has the tonality, he just has to ask the right question. Can you see? In this way you really kind of read the text. I have always made, and I still keep up the bet. I bet my whole head. They can cut off my whole head. If any Christian scientist in the world, no matter if they are a million or not, if he, after having studied that textbook for donkey's years, can tell me what is in it in an ordered way, I let my head be cut off. There is not one that can do it. And this is called a scientific book. And people read it and don't know what is in it. Isn't that? See, that's where I come back to the point of understanding, where we said, consciousness determines our life practice. If that consciousness is cultured more and more into understanding, into scientific understanding, therefore into a structured understanding, the higher must be our life experience. The better must be our life experience. The more valuable must be our life in this world. Yes? Now, can you see that if in this way we can have a structured understanding of the Bible and of the textbook, and no more anatomistic sense, here a sentence, there a sentence, here a nice verse from Psalms, and here a nice sayings of Jesus, and there something about Moses. If I have a structured sense, structured tonality of those two books, naturally I have a very different consciousness than anybody else who reads those two books. And therefore my life and my value in this world will have another value. Perhaps a value that people may not notice, that people may not even see, but that doesn't matter, but it has a higher value. And it has a higher impact on the world. So, this is what we are driving at. To introduce the student really into a consciousness that does not only know facts, but that is culturing himself into a structured scientific understanding of reality. And that all has to do with the tonality of the capitalized terms. The 7 and the 4. It has only to do with that. I have another 10 or 15 minutes left. What is the practice? What is the healing practice on this basis? How does, therefore, our sense of practice differentiate itself from the ordinary Christian Science practice and application? And this is very easy to be seen from the difference of consciousness. If I stay in the old sense of Christian Science consciousness, where I have a knowledge of various atomistic facts, then my practice is according to that, because consciousness determines my life experience, and therefore also my practice. Which means that as long as I have that kind of consciousness, I will always try to solve also isolated problems. Therefore, the Christian scientist in general is very, very busy in solving problems. He's constantly about making a demonstration. He tells you, I have made him a demonstration. He tells you, I have not yet made that demonstration. He tells you, this time I still have to work out this and that and the other. He has a legion of isolated problems around about him. And he's very busy in dealing with this legion of isolated problems. He has the problem with his body, he has the problem with his stomach and with his kidneys, and he has the problem with his job, and he has the problem with his superior, he has the problem with his wife and with his husband and with the children and with the grandchildren and with the aunt and with the husband. He has the problem. And he's just about working it out. I'm working it out, and I'm going to work it out. That's what he can do. He can do nothing else, because his consciousness is atomistic. Therefore, he can only use atomistic ideas.
Atomistic.
Yeah. Single, isolated ideas. Yeah. So, that's his practice. And the practitioner, he says, I'm a practitioner, therefore I sit down next to the telephone, I'm waiting until the telephone rings. And he takes them up. Here a problem, there a problem, there a problem. Fine, okay. But this is not what he said he was driving at. He was not driving at. Now, what is it? If we have a consciousness that is formed, molded by the holistic, by the universal whole, holistic, by a universal structure of being, where being is just one, there's only one being. And when we begin to know this one being through the seven synonymous terms, through the four sides, through the capitalized terms. What kind of a consciousness do I have? Then I have a consciousness that is constantly going out from the capitalized terms. Do you know what I mean by capitalized terms? Huh? The capitalized terms in Christian Science are the seven synonymous terms, the four sides, and the levels. Yeah. So, I have a universal, a holistic consciousness. And therefore, with that holistic consciousness, is working out its own aim. It's not going to work out what I or my patient tells me what the problem is. What I or the patient tells me what the problem is his personal, human, subjective concept of a problem. That's not good enough for us. Can you see again? The one who says, I have this problem, I have that problem, I have to work out this and that, who says so? Who is it that says that? Is it God that says that? No. Huh? It's again the human mind that says that. The human mind defines what is a problem or what not. And the human mind is a liar. The human mind may say, I have a very big problem to work out, when in fact, he hasn't. when in fact the best thing is happening to a person, he says, the devil is let loose. He has a very incorrect sense of what the problem is. Very incorrect. Therefore, the more we get the tonality of the capitalized terms, and the more we stay within that tonality, because we see there is no other practice than to stay in that tonality, to stay in that consciousness of reality, to stay in the consciousness of mind and spirit and soul, principle, life, truth, and love, to stay in that consciousness where we see that these seven synonymous terms are constantly revealing the world, are constantly operating as the Christ, are constantly bringing out and reflecting Christianity as that, and are constantly bringing forth being in a new way of science. If I stay in that consciousness, then I'm practicing. Then I'm practicing Christian science. The other is not practicing Christian science, the other is practicing metaphysics. And very bad metaphysics, because it always goes out from the human mind. The human mind always says, what is wrong? They don't ask the divine mind. As if the human mind would know what is right and wrong. And it doesn't. As if the human mind would know what is our life career, what is our life purpose, what is our life meaning. As if the human mind would know what we are here for in our whole life. It doesn't. The human mind has a very, very limited and wrong concept of one's own life. Isn't that so? Everybody has a sense, well, as long as the body doesn't hurt me, I'm fine. As long as I have my little job and go along and nobody disturbs me, I'm fine. It would be so good if it could be disturbed. If it really would be shaken out of that rut. If really the Christ idea would kick them right and left and say, get out of that rut. You have a bigger aim in you. You have a much bigger life than what you think you have. Get out of that little narrowness. That would be the Christ idea. And if the Christ idea kicks, he says, I have a problem to work out. So, can you see that if we don't have that consciousness of the tonality, that we define our life, our lives. The purpose of our life, the quality of our life, the meaning of our life, what we are here for the whole world, we humanly define it. If we go out from the tonality of the, you know, of the capitalized term, the capitalized term define to us what God wants us to be. And that's the difference. That's the enormous difference. That we take Christian science not to solve our humanly defined problem, but that we take Christian science that God uses us. And that God defines to us who we are, what we are, what for we are. And that is a million times bigger than our humanly conceived sense of our life. It needs courage. That's true. It needs courage. It's much easier to say, well, things go bad. Things aren't too good. And well, I better pick up my socks and try to work it out. That's easier. Then to say, to mind, spirit, soul, and principle, I've chosen love, to say to them, here I am. Now, God, use me the way you like to use me. And I don't murmur if you use me the way I don't like it personally. Use me. Make with me what the idea of God wants me to do and to be. And that needs courage, because it needs that ability to lay down the whole mortal sense of things. To lay down one's in one's personal a sense of a career, one's pride and everything, says, I don't want to be anything except that which the idea of God wants me to be and to do. But if we do that, if we make that complete turn, then you can be quite sure you will not have to meet a lot of problems. Because that's the our prophylactic practice. Prophylactic is another term. Preventive is the preventive practice. See? Because through that consciousness, God is working with us, and that doesn't bring up problems. That doesn't create problems. That only creates the light of truth and leads us to the light of truth. So that as we, the more we are really in that atmosphere of the capitalized term work, from that point, you will see you don't meet a lot of problems. Practically no problems. Actually no problems. Because God doesn't create problems. But it needs that willingness to bend one's knees. And that has always been the great difficulty. You know how the prophets always were telling Israel, well, you are a stiff-necked nation. You don't want to bend your head. You want to be proud of yourself. You want to do it. You are the big guy. And you are a stiff-necked nation, and it needs to lay down. And Jesus said we must lay down our mortal sense of life. And only as we give up our life, we win life. And that's the piece of the whole teaching that we are giving. Yes, I think that's perhaps a survey of what these classes are here for. Okay, that's that.